This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And welcome back to the NutriMedical Report. We have, of course, Harley Schlanger here. Harley, we have lots of news to cover today. And, of course, in hour three, we'll talk about a lot of other issues. But, Harley, let's go over the issues that are going on in Europe. The meeting between Macron and Trump, you've got some comments on that. The situation you're getting ready for Kim Jong-un. And I'm always a little concerned when I see Trump make really strong statements against dictator Xi or dictator or Kim Jong-un, and then he appraises them. We'll talk about that more in hour number three, but I want you to kind of highlight the real issues and what's going on now and how we're moving towards some good things and some bad things, and honestly, I think some advice for Trump needs to be fleshed out so we move forward with a positive move towards stabilizing the situation in Korea, but also the world economy. Things are pretty crazy, aren't they?
Well, that's a lot to cover, so let's take them.
I'll let you pick up what issues you want to cover.
You know, let me start with something that is not getting much coverage in the U.S. press, which was a press conference today that the Russians and a group of Syrian civilians and doctors and medical professionals had at the OPCW headquarters.
Right, you're talking about the Office for Chemical Weapons. In other words,
Prohibition of Chemical Weapons.
Right, and that office, by the way, is sponsored by the United Nations. They've been out multiple times, including they were at the same buildings back in November. Please continue.
Well, they did send a team finally into Douma in Syria, and the Russians were there. They were protecting them. And while they haven't released a report yet, the Russians who were with them said that they confirmed that they had no evidence of chemical weapons either at the site that was targeted by the U.S., U.K., and France for a strike, that is the so-called chemical weapons lab that was hit with missiles. The OPCW confirmed 2 months earlier that there were no chemical weapons at this place.
I have to insert something because I'm a chemical weapons hazmat officer. And you may or may not know this, but there's absolutely no way to get rid of chlorine or sarin nerve gas. It's embedded in the rocks, the trees, the drapes, the concrete, everything. And there's absolutely no freaking way, if there were chemical weapons, they could scrub it. So the news media, including Fox News, is full of crap, said that they could somehow, the Russians were trying to prevent it so they could scrub up the area. They're full of it, okay? So if you're out there and you're not hearing hazmat officers and you're hearing the idiots over at all the news media, including Fox, don't believe a damn word they're saying because they're not hazmat officers. They don't know what they're talking about. And they want to still say this narrative that Trump was justified in striking the buildings. No, he wasn't. Okay? Please continue.
There's an interesting point when Theresa May went before Parliament and said it was necessary to hit this chemical weapons lab. Some parliamentarians said, well, if in fact that had been a chemical weapons lab and it had unleashed chemical weapons and killed people, which would happen if you bombed it,
right,
would you take responsibility for it, or were you lying when you said you had evidence that there were chemical weapons there?
Yeah, if you want, the worst thing to do is to hit a chemical weapons factory with bombs and all the local community are jowled a cheek beside it is freaking stupid. You wouldn't do that. You go in with a special op team and actually remove it carefully in special containers and aeroflot it out of there. You wouldn't damn well bomb it. It's crazy.
Well, that was what was already done by the Russians under OPCW supervision.
Right.
After Assad was originally accused of using chemical weapons back in 2013.
And there was no logical reason why we would do it anyway. There's no sense. He's already won the war. The war's over. And, you know, the people that want still to have regime change like Macron, we want to build a new Syria. Macron, you're an idiot. You're not going to build a new Syria. Syria's over, okay?
Let me get to the story here, though, because I want to make sure your listeners get the scoop. The Russian representative Shulgin from the OPCW, joined by several Russian chemical weapons experts and then medical professionals from Syria, held a press conference where they released the report, the original OPCW report, which said that Syria had complied with eliminating chemical weapons, that this particular site, the Barzah base, was chemical weapons free, and then third, that they brought the young boy from Duma, whose picture was featured as one of those who had been hit with chemical weapons.
Right.
And he told the story. He said he was hungry. He was with his mother. He was told there was food at the hospital. He and his mother walked into the hospital, and they were immediately hit with hoses and sprayed with hoses and had cold water dumped on them while White Helmets people were yelling, "Gas attack, gas attack."
Right.
So he was there. The doctors were there, and one of the only question from Western journalists was to a Syrian doctor who said he paid his own way because he didn't want the Russians to fly him there. He paid his own way, and he was asked, "Aren't you just saying this because the Assad regime has threatened you?" And he said, "I'm not political. I'm a doctor. But I've seen what's happened in this war. And I feel safe when the Syrian army is there. However, no one would have to threaten me to tell the truth, because if I thought the Assad regime was using chemical weapons against my people, I would speak out against it."
Right.
And the journalist said, "You didn't answer my question. Are you afraid that Assad would do something to you if you didn't give this report?"
Right.
Now, nothing of this press conference so far has appeared in Western media.
Of course not.
In spite of the fact that it was top Russian officials, and what we're expecting is that the OPCW, which is now farmed out to five separate labs, the evidence they collected, that they're going to report probably in about 3 or 4 weeks that there was no chemical attack in Duma. But by that point, who's going to remember Duma from 2013, from the 2015, from the constant claims of Assad being a reckless murderer?
This is a wag the dog deal, isn't it?
It's worse than that, because that then brings us to what Macron did.
Right.
Here you have this guy who sees himself as a cross between Napoleon and Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, my.
That he's the great defender of France.
Oh, sure.
And he's going to be friends with Trump, but he's also going to manipulate Trump to get back in the Western consensus. So he comes to Washington, and what does he say? I mean, his push is the U.S. must rejoin the Paris Climate Change Conference, that the U.S. must stay in Syria. Why? Well, he said because Assad is a bad dictator, and the Iranians are establishing a terror base in Syria to deploy throughout the Middle East. Now, at the same time he's saying that, he said we have to stick to the Syrian treaty that was signed and negotiated by six countries and Iran. Not Syria, but the Iran agreement.
Right.
Now, there's a real contradiction there. If, in fact, Iran is a terrorist state that's so dangerous, then I would say go ahead and rip up the treaty.
Right.
But the fact is that nuclear weapons inspectors have been in Iran. They've confirmed that Iran is complying with the treaty, that there's no problem from Iran with this treaty. So why is Macron saying stick with the treaty but stay in Syria to stop Iranian terrorism? He's a phony.
Yeah.
He's pushing.
Well, here's the question I want to ask you, and this is for everybody out there listening. Has anybody ever in any country seen somebody drive into kill people in Britain or Europe or anywhere else, or shoot anybody, or create a bioweapon, or have a body bomb blow up that's an Iranian terrorist from the mullahs? Not one situation. Every single one. Let me finish this. Sunni. So people have to learn some math. Zero Iranian, 100% Sunni terrorism, and the Sunnis are allied with the Israelis, who want to keep America there as well as the Sunnis. the Saudi Arabians, the Qataris, etc. They're all trying to keep us there, including Macron and these maniacs in Europe, and there's no reason for it. None.
Good point.
Right?
Good point.
That's really disgusting. They don't know math, do they?
Hear that.
Welcome back. So, Harley, hopefully this is a smelling salt for the public out there. They're watching what I call the snooze. If you do it, you'll get brain damage. In fact, I would predict that every moment you watch, depending on the news media, Fox, you lose half an IQ point per hour. Others like CNN and MSNBC, you lose 2 points per hour. But you all will end up with brain damage, I call blame damage, where instead of brain damage, you blame somebody else for things that are incorrect or incorrect information, like, say, the Russians tried to stop the OPCW coming there so they can scrub it up. It's like, stop it, okay? I don't want to hear that. And then when I hear even statements from Trump, it's obvious that the people surrounding him are either knuckleheads, they're globalists, or they're just damned evil. And you have to understand that Trump has made a bunch of missteps, which can be corrected. I got a card in the mail that I'm now, because I'm GOP supporter, I'm on the advisory board. Well, listen, I've had four letters back and forth between me and John W. Spring from President Trump or his staff, but they're not interacting directly. And if we gave them advice, including advice that I get from you and others that I have interviewed on my show and my own research and my own classified contacts, Trump would be a far wiser man, but he's not. He's got a bunch of knuckleheads, globalists, or evil people around him who really don't understand the issues and are going to screw things up. Aren't they?
Well, it's interesting when you talk about the media, because one of the things that I did an interview with Mrs. LaRouche yesterday, and she said, look, why are Americans and Germans so pessimistic? And why is it that the Chinese are optimistic? Even the Russians, who are suffering under the effects of sanctions and lower oil prices, the Russians are optimistic. The Syrian people who have just been through this horrendous civil war are optimistic. So why is it that in the West we're not optimistic? And she said,
right,
it's the media. It's
right,
the media, which is designed to convince you that you have no power. You just have to go along and get whatever little pleasures you can out of life because you have no control over your life. And so you see that with people who say, they'll say, I agree with you, Harley, I agree with your analysis, but you'll never win. You can't win.
Well, I'll give you an example of how that's concrete. Last week we had Zuckerberg in front of Congress. We had a Diamond and Silk, or conservative black ladies, and these ladies, I love these ladies. They could come over to dinner any day. I'm telling you, they're awesome. But I can tell you what I see going on in America, and all the parties, including the so-called Fox News, they're contributing to the balkanization and the tribalization of this nation started by Obama and Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. The Republicans aren't much better off, especially the GOP, which are fighting Trump. And they're not helping the situation to provide better solutions and analysis. Your organization says, look, do trade, not war. That's one of the things you're saying. Energy flux density, deal with things like the coming apophis in 11 years. Deal with things like, how are we going to deal with artificial intelligence, robotics, and so on? People don't deal with real issues here. Pollution of the planet. We're polluting so much the benthic layer of the oceans are dying, and the carbon oxygen cycle is not dying because we have too many SUVs. It's because we've allowed industry to move to places like China without regulations and others to prevent pollution from getting into the benthic layer of the oceans, destroying the ozone layer. And we've got post-geriatric nuclear reactors that give off radio toxins that destroy the ozone layer. That's our problem. But we don't do problem identification. We don't do problem interventions. And we have to work collectively as a group of nations for the whole body of the human race as an organism. We don't treat ourselves as an organism with many nations, do we?
Well, let me go back to the Macron thing, because that's a prime example of this. Here you have a guy who's in big trouble in France. His popularity rating is now in the 30% range.
Oh, really?
So it's, yeah, because he promised that he was going to have a fair tax policy, and his tax policy favored the upper 1% of the wealthy class of France. He's now going after the trade unions, in particular the rail union, which is one of the most efficient organizations, and by that I mean French rail system is a pretty good system, and he's going after it. So, and then he's going with a straight City of London Rothschild policy of putting all of Europe come under a budgetary authority of Brussels, which means no national sovereignty, no national budgets anymore. It all goes to the bureaucrats, the unelected bureaucrats of Brussels. So he's coming over to the U.S. with growing unpopularity in France. He lectures the Congress about how we have to take on Russia. The U.S. was right to join with France and the United Kingdom in bombing Syria, and on and on and on. And the imbeciles in the U.S. Congress cheered him madly. They were cheering on their feet, Republicans and Democrats. Now, that's what shows you the problem. I mean, you have a lunatic like Macron, who's a British puppet,
right,
coming over here lecturing Trump, and the Republicans cheer him.
Yeah, well, why were they cheering? Because Macron is part of the French version of the swamp. Same as McConnell. Do you know why? I listened to a comment yesterday. I couldn't believe it. That at the rate of approval of Trump's cabinet, it'll be 9 years before they're all approved. That'll be after he's out of office.
Yeah.
And they haven't decided, hey, they work 3 days a week. Have them work every damn day, and it'll stop in 2 weeks' time. And they'll stop this 30-hour debate garbage and get down to approving the cabinet moving forward. And if Trump doesn't like somebody, fire them, you know? And also have an open media where you have a half-hour, you know, basically fireside chat. And don't just have the people in the White House press room. Have people like you and me. If you could ask a question a week to Trump or his administration, wouldn't that be wonderful that Harley Schlanger and LaRouche Foundation could ask one or two questions a week in an open media that would get play everywhere? Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. Wouldn't that be wonderful that you ask incisive, scalpel-like questions to the body politic? Wouldn't that help?
Of course it would. But, you know, the point here is that the Macron visit showed the extent to which there is a consensus, as you said, the swamp, you might say, which exists in Europe and the United States. Now, the good news about it is that while they're cheering each other and patting each other on the back and getting rave reviews in the controlled media, their whole system is blowing apart. I just did an article about something that the European Central Bank demanded from Deutsche Bank last week. You know what they said? They said, we need to know, if you have a systemic problem, can you resolve it? And of course the answer is no, because Deutsche Bank's liabilities are greater than their assets, their real assets. They have $42 trillion of book value of derivatives on their books. That's...
Whoa. Like, and aren't they one of the top five or six banks in the world, Deutsche?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they just,
and not only that, they stopped taking even paper gold for settling accounts over a year ago.
They just fired their CEO 2 weeks ago in a Sunday night emergency board meeting. And they're hemorrhaging. They're losing money every year. Their stock is down 30% so far this year. And when they do their assets and liabilities, there are whole areas of their books which are blank for reasons that are clear.
They call it redactions, right?
Yeah.
Redactions.
They don't want to acknowledge that what they're counting as regulatory assets are worthless derivatives.
So, well, they pump them up to get them invested, and that's why the entire financial marketplace of the world is ready to pop. And it's not just here, it's China, it's Asia, it's America. The whole world is ready to go down what we call the black hole, isn't it? We're back. On the break, we talked a little bit about the Trump and Putin need to talk, and as well as Xi, because really this agreement coming up the end of May, early June with Xi, with Kim Jong-un, is only happening because Trump is dialoguing with Xi, who he gives good chocolate cake in Mar-a-Lago, and he has a a talking relationship with Putin. In fact, although you congratulate him, a lot of people kind of disabuse Trump for, how can you congratulate Putin? He's a dictator. Yeah, but like Trump knows, you got to negotiate with people. That's why the art of the deal. And the fact that he's doing this, because most politicians wouldn't do what Trump's doing, which is why he's actually succeeding and everybody else failed. If he has a dialogue, he can have a conjoint message to Israel. We need to rework this agreement, but it's not a green light to Israel to bomb the Bashar reactor. I have intel sources that scare the hell out of me that if they tear up this agreement without a proper resolution, Israel's going to bomb Bashar. And people don't realize the consequences of that, do they?
Well, let me go back to a couple of points here that I think are that fill in the picture.
Right.
Let's start with this question of diplomacy. Most of what people think Trump is doing is nonsense because it's coming from lying media.
Right.
As you point out, Trump has an ongoing relationship with Xi Jinping, which he repeatedly says he's a great friend of mine. We get along really well. I like him. He likes me. Now, he's just sent this team over, Lighthizer, Navarro, Mnuchin, and Larry Kudlow, to negotiate with the Chinese. And before they left, Lighthizer and Navarro said, this is going to be tough negotiations. They've got to give us this. They've got to do that. It's all up to China. Well, what Trump said to the four of them is, Xi is my friend. You can talk to him. Let's work out a deal.
Right.
So we have the media saying we're going to have a trade war, everything's going to go to hell. But Trump is working with Xi Jinping, not just on a trade deal between the U.S. and China, but a U.S. participation in the Belt and Road Initiative, the Silk Road Initiative, and three, North Korea. Now, this was really world historic today, this get-together of Kim Jong-un and President Moon of South Korea. World historic. You know, they've been at war since 1953. They never signed a full peace treaty. We've seen the threats of the last decade build to the point of North Korea having missiles that could carry nuclear weapons even to the United States. But what just happened? Kim Jong-un is coming across as a real diplomat. He met with Pompeo. There is back channels going on between the U.S. and North Korea, but also China and North Korea, Russia and North Korea, even Japan and North Korea. Now, this is a diplomatic coup. And I just read somewhere where there's someone who said Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize if they can pull this off. Well, certainly he would deserve it more than Obama. But the important thing is what you were just saying. There are negotiations between people based on principles, based on defending national interests, but then recognizing that when national interests clash with bilateral agreements, you have to work them out. You have to negotiate. Now, also, Bill, in this picture of Asian diplomacy, today there was a meeting, an informal meeting between Prime Minister Modi of India and Xi Jinping of China. The neocons are trying to play off India against China.
Of course they are.
They're saying it's
like one of the triggers they want for World War III. They want World War III, don't they?
Yeah. And they talk about the Indo-Pacific region. Now, Modi, who played along with a little bit of this to stoke the nationalism, and also to send a message to Pakistan, which is that Pakistan and India are going to negotiate, but it has to be done on a fair basis. So he was critical of China, but now they're meeting. What are they talking about? They're saying, we're the only two countries in the world with over a billion people. We have 5,000-year civilizations. We have a lot of young people who are technically adept. What if we work together on the Belt and Road? And there are indications that before Modi and Xi met today, earlier this week, the Indian foreign minister met with the Chinese foreign minister, and they made a whole series of agreements. Now, in June, in China, there's going to be the first expanded meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This was set up originally as an anti-terror community of nations, which included the Caucasus region, Russia, and China. For the first time now, Pakistan and India are full members. And so this is another negotiation, but it also includes a bank which is funding Silk Road projects. So while Macron is coming over here with nothing to offer except more of the European-U.S. free trade agreements, the European-wide anti-sovereign Brussels dictatorship, you have coming out of China, coming out of India, out of the Koreas, out of Japan, out of Russia, an optimistic push for a whole new economic paradigm based on principles of the American system. Now, I'll just mention one more thing, and then we can discuss this a little bit back and forth. In 1996, LaRouche made a proposal. He said, this is when Russia was being destroyed by British and U.S. banks after the fall of communism. And LaRouche said, look, if Russia, India, China, and the United States got together, you could have the greatest flourishing of economic development in world history. And his idea was picked up by Yevgeny Primakov, who was the Russian prime minister at the time. And Primakov made a proposal which became the basis of the BRICS. He said Russia, India, and China should work together. Now, you hear from the West, this is an anti-Western alliance.
Right.
That's a lot of crap. The Chinese want trade with the West. The Chinese are all over Europe right now, signing agreements in Bulgaria, in Lithuania, in Poland, in Portugal, in Sweden. They're all over Europe, and the Europeans want the Chinese. It's the bureaucrats who are run by the banks, largely London and Brussels banks, that don't want the Chinese. And in the U.S., it's the neocons and the neoliberals. So the real issue facing civilization is, can we get President Trump freed from this Mueller atrocity, this Russiagate atrocity, to go into a full collaboration with Russia and China on the New Silk Road, a rebuilding of U.S. infrastructure, ending the speculative bubbles and swindles of the last 30 years. If we would do that, we would put an end to the British control. And after the next break, I have something interesting for you on the British.
Right. Well, let me give you a quick solution. Sessions is the problem. He's praising Rosenstein and even other people who are actually criminals inside the Department of Justice. And he's not dealing with the real issues, which is to set up an independent counsel and to close off, if he literally went back into his to become a state senator and got another replacement as an attorney general, they immediately set up an independent counsel to deal with Hillary Clinton and these other issues. And Mueller would have his thing closed down to say it's only in we're going to narrow the spectrum and it'll be over. The problem right now, they paralyzed Trump, and I think a lot of his bad judgments have happened, not because of people like Stormy Daniels. It's because they've harassed him so much, he's not thinking straight about issues, and he's not surrounded by all the people with the best intel. How easy are you guys able to actually get in touch with Trump to get better intel of what's going on? I mean, look at Lyndon LaRouche. He's got so much wisdom over so many decades. He should have speed dial to Lyndon to find out what's going on and what he should do next. I doubt that he gets a day, a weekly, monthly, or year nearly talk to Lyndon or anybody else in your organization, right?
Well, it's getting through. It's getting through certain channels, including things like the Veterans for Trump and some of his older friends. But it's right. You're right.
Not direct. It's indirect. It's indirect, and it's filtered.
No, you can't get to him directly. You can't get
right.
To him.
Right. The swamp has a filter around him, don't they?
Well, it's called John Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. The Kelly filter.
Water is the...
And welcome back. So Please continue. Let's continue on with what the British Empire has done, a financial empire, through their proxies, through the places like Guernsey Island, the Grand Cayman Islands, etc. Tell us the whole story behind this, because it's the second British Empire, and you can see this on Amazon Prime for about $3, unless you have a Prime account. What's the name of the documentary?
Well, this is a documentary called The Spider's Web, Britain's Second Empire. It's about a 65-minute documentary. It flows really quickly, but it's by a guy named John Christensen, who is the founder of the Tax Justice Network. And what he points out, among other things, is that he was investigating how so many of these large financial corporations pay no taxes. And what he found is that that's a part of the story, but it's only a small part of the story. They're able to hide their money in these offshore banking havens.
Including a lot of U.S.-based transnational corporations do it in these British bank accounts, don't they? These offshore corporations. That's what's going on. Many trillions of dollars.
Jersey Island, Guernsey Island, British Virgin Islands, Cayman Islands, Gibraltar. Now, these tax havens are not private companies per se. They're run by the Bank of England and the City of London. That is run in the sense that they're operating under license of the Bank of England and the City of London. So they have no requirements for transparency. One of the things they report is their trillions of dollars that just seem to disappear. And no one knows where they're going, but then they show up in takeovers, they show up in bailouts of banks. The policies of the last 40 years, the securitization policy, financialization, the creation of the derivatives markets, the deregulation of banking, all of this came from this Bank of England, City of London network. And you remember last week we talked about Theresa May speaking at the Lord Mayor's banquet of the City of London in November of last year, talking about global Britain. This is what she's talking about. This is the real power behind right. geopolitical manipulations. Now,
yeah, this financial. In other words, it's a final data. It's money data, right?
Yeah. And this is how they buy politicians. This is how they buy legislatures. This is how they run corporations. This is how they choose the winners and losers. So, again, it's called The Spider's Web, Britain's Second Empire. And I would very much recommend that to your listeners. Because, you know, look, a lot of people have this view, well, the British, yeah, Christopher Steele was a Brit, and Theresa May was the one who blew the whistle on Putin on the Skripal case. And yeah, the White Helmets are funded by Britain. But Britain has no power. Well, if you think that, then you're going to be controlled by someone else for the rest of your life because you can't think for yourself. The British Empire is no longer a military empire. It's a financial empire.
Right.
It's an empire that exemplifies...
It's also an intel empire. Well, yeah, it's a financial and intel empire, and they're locked together, aren't they?
It exemplifies what Eisenhower meant when he warned about the military-industrial complex. The intersection of companies like British Aerospace, Lockheed Martin, with the banking system, the Royal Bank of Scotland, the Canadian banks, the Swiss banks, the money laundering centers.
The Queen owns all these banks. Do you know that? How many of the 10 largest banks in the world are literally owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Queen and the British? The Bank of Scotland, the Bank of America. Yeah, they're owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Queen. Bank of America, the Royal Bank of Canada is one of the three largest banks in the world. The Queen owns it.
Well, and you look at Deutsche Bank. I just wrote an article about Deutsche Bank, which ceased to be a German bank about 15 years ago when it set up its trading offices in London and ran the bank from London and literally ran it into the ground. Now, Deutsche Bank at one point had a CEO named Alfred Herrhausen who was a disciple of people who studied the American system. And Herrhausen was the second generation of post-war German bankers who understood that Germany was rebuilt after the war based on national credit policy. That is, a government direction of credit into physical production, into industry, with tax credits for industrial innovation, with favored credit ratings, or favored credit channels, rather, not for speculation, but for production.
That's what you talked about for years on this program, Hamiltonianism, yeah. Which is Lyndon LaRouche Hamiltonianism. That's what made America great. When the British cut off, even wouldn't send looms to actually make cloth or material to make guns, America decided to build up its own industry and actually create the idea of factories. And its credit system was responsible. Hamiltonianism made America great.
And this same policy was behind what Bismarck did to unify Germany, which the British destroyed by launching World War I against Germany.
Right.
After the war, this is how Germany was rebuilt. And Herrhausen was part of the second generation that was trying to do that. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, Herrhausen immediately gravitated toward LaRouche's idea of extending high-speed rail into the former Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact and credit to build up their industries rather than looting them.
Right.
Herrhausen was assassinated by British-directed terrorists in 1990.
Right.
And this was a crucial blow. And after that point, the bank lost its way and in the mid-90s became a speculative universal bank, which was right at the center of globalization, of free trade agreements, and so on. Now it's on the verge of collapse. So the whole transatlantic system, because of this kind of shift, is collapsing. And meanwhile, what we were talking about earlier, the Asian perspective, the Eurasian perspective, this was the great nightmare of the British geopoliticians at the end of the 19th, early 20th century. They created Israel and Saudi Arabia as two forces to fight against this kind of Eurasian perspective. They killed John Kennedy to make sure that the United States didn't participate in a shift away from the Anglo-American policy.
Right.
And today, under Trump, and I don't know how much of this Trump really knows, he instinctively knows some of it, but we have an opportunity to join with Russia and China and crush the globalists. And your listeners need to play an active role in promoting this idea against the globalists, against the free traders, against the geopoliticians, because this is the golden opportunity that if we lose it, we may lose civilization.
Well, again, a good example is if Trump wants to do something about Google and Facebook, it's not just here, he should not allow these companies to suppress and oppress the people in China. If he wants to have to prevent a war, he needs to not just threaten sanctions against the PLA and so on. He needs to say, look, unless you renegotiate this idea of an intellectual property and American companies can sell products into your market so we can reduce the trade deficit, so we have reciprocal trade, these are the solutions to Xi. Xi is going to go away when he gets food and factories and an olive branch saying, we're not going to have a war crimes tribunal like after we did with the invasion of Iraq and Syria and Libya. Because these leaders, when they handed over their countries to us, including their weapons, Libya did, Muammar Gaddafi, we killed them. And Putin have, in a sense, created this proxy nation just through history. For example, North Korea used to be a satellite of the Soviet Union. People don't understand the history of it, do they? And they don't know that our policies can determine either peace and trade or economic warfare and disjunction and eventually physical war and mega death. And you can
really
negotiate before you can either negotiate before body count or after.
Quickly, the American system is the most successful economic model in history. That's what the Chinese understand. That's what Americans need to relearn.
Right. And it's almost like the globalists are trying to make us forget our history, aren't they?
Yep.
And that's what LaRouche and your organization are trying to do. Remember who you are, America. That's what made you great in the past and can make you great again. But the Chinese are students of history. They've tried to incorporate this, including investing after the 2008-09 collapse. They invested in infrastructure, not in bigger banks. making the big piggy banks even bigger. They never fixed everything after that movie, The Big Short. They just continue the same problems that are going to cause a greater catastrophic collapse down the future.
Yep.
Thank you, Harley. Amazing analysis and solutions. Back in a moment with Hour 3. Stay tuned.
If you owe money to the